more and talk less. I had a favorite pair of Fry boots that came most of the way up my calves, pale leather, rounded toe. They looked fabulous. Unfortunately, even Nancy Sinatra wasn't made to go walking far in these boots. They weren't very comfortable. Why is high fashion always so impractical? I would have to discuss this with my feminist friends. So picture this, a young faggot going about his morning business in scarves and jewelry, a lovely blouse, pants tucked into a bitchin' pair of boots, promenading down the main street of a small logging town in the Pacific Northwest in 1980. It's a wonder I survived. Passing cars would honk and flip me the finger. I just waved, princess-like. I was right downtown on the busiest street when this logger dude was walking toward me on the sidewalk. I knew he was a logger dude by the length of his Carhartt work pants, which were cut off an inch above the top of his mud cake boots. Plus, he had on a plaid shirt and suspenders and had a stocking cap. He was ruggedly handsome, 5'10", massive shoulders, blonde and scruffy. I thought, he's a lumberjack and he's okay. We were about to pass each other, going opposite directions on the sidewalk, when he stopped abruptly. I stopped too. How could I not? "Are you a faggot?" he said to me. I was stunned. Wasn't it obvious? I was about to reply when he grumbled, "You disgust me. I want to kill you." I suddenly had visions of his calloused hands twisting a choker chain around a down tree about the size of my neck. He lunged at me like he meant to do a full body check. I pirouetted to one side, flitted past him, and hurried down the block. I turned around to see if he was coming after me, ready to run. I prayed my boots wouldn't betray me. He stood there a moment, shook his head, then walked on. I thought I heard him growl.
Hey, let me applaud that, Don. I mean that sincerely. I know the town. I know the people. I had a boyfriend when I was, and I, we weren't, we, I'm sure he was gay. I wanted him so bad to let me know he was gay, and he was the lead in the play, and I was one of the characters that, you know, that was, I was afraid of betraying my masculine side. So I did the bi trip for 100 years. You know, I've got to tell you that somewhere along the line today, somebody read a line that said, "Love doesn't know anything more than the feeling of love." And I've had two men in my life that I have loved, and my father besides. So thank you for your story. Thank you.
Thank you for the story and the way that you told it, because I can just visualize that scene and also visualize the ugliness of a person who just had to go out of their way, you know, to be nasty to you. And so thank you for that.
I'd like to just go back to something that Don mentioned. And I checked to see when the first Pride Parade was in Vancouver. And it was actually in 1978, which was the same year that the Pride flag actually came into being as well. So it's a bit of a coincidence. And I've been in many Pride parades here in Vancouver. I was certainly late, much later than some of my friends here in coming out. I actually didn't come out until the late 80s, early 90s. But one of the one Pride parade that I remember most is one that I participated in a number of years ago now. And the Pride parades originally were had a lot of political content to them, because back in the 1970s, LGBT people did not have many rights. And so it was not only a sign of solidarity, but also it was in a way a political protest. Over the years, the tenor of the Pride Parade changed. Clearly, as advances were made and as we achieved different rights, then a lot more celebration came into the Pride Parade. But as Don said, there still is a whole lot of persecution, perhaps not so much in Canada, but internationally. And this brings me to the Pride Parade that I remember most. I'm part of an organization called Rainbow Refugee Society. And the Pride Parade that we had, as a group, we made a decision to actually participate in the Pride Parade, even though many of the people who were part of our organization had come from countries where they experienced persecution. And they were very much afraid. They were afraid that their picture would be picked up on television, because Pride Parades in those days were televised, and that somebody back home, some family member or somebody back home, would actually see them, identify them, and they would still then be afraid of running a risk to their life and safety, even though they were here in Vancouver. And what we decided to do was everybody dressed in white, so that everybody had white T-shirts, white pants or skirts or whatever a person wanted to wear. And we all wore white face masks that we bought at the party store, that I think is, I don't know if it still is, but it was moved to that little corner at Terminal, not far from where the 411 currently is now. And so there was this fairly large contingent of people marching, all dressed in white, all covered with white face masks. And what I remember is walking along the street and these hundreds of thousands of people actually cheering. And many of the folks who were in that Pride Parade, for them, it was the first time ever that they were out in a public place and the first time ever in their lives that they experienced being supported by the community in which they were living. And that, I've been in many Pride Parades. I was in many before, and I've been in many since. But that's the one that for me stands out in terms of my recollection of how important the Pride Parade was for those many, many folks that had come to Canada looking for a safe place to live, and at the same time still struggling with their fear and their anxiety, but willing to put themselves out there, willing to take that step, to be out in a very public way, in a very public place, and be accepted and cheered. Since that parade, there have been many other parades, and many of the folks that were in that first parade have walked without masks, and who now experience that walking in the parade and being seen and being visible, and being proud to be seen and visible. So I think the Pride Parade, even though like last year and this year, because of the pandemic, we don't have that same experience, but hopefully next year we will, has served a purpose for, historically for bringing about the visibility to us, but also has served now to remind us that that while we here have the opportunity to celebrate who we are, that there's still many people around the world that do not have that opportunity. And we read stories about countries where they make an effort to have a Pride Parade, and there's maybe 4 or 5 people walking on a sidewalk with a pride flag, and that the police come along and beat them up and arrest them. So we don't ever want to take for granted the fact that we have the privilege of being able to live openly and freely as who we are here, and also to acknowledge and recognize that others don't share that same freedom and experience. So for me, the Pride Week and the Pride Parade is about celebration, and it's also about reminding ourselves where we were, how we got to where we are now, and the fact that there are many other people in different places around the world who are still struggling to get to where we are now. So the Pride Week and Pride Parade still plays a significant role. Sometimes I think here in Canada and maybe in the US and other northern places, we kind of forget. We forget that it's not all about celebration, but it also is an opportunity for us to remember that we got to this place by struggle. None of the rights that we gained were handed to us. Most of them came through the courts. We had to challenge all of the legislation, and every time the governments fought against us, every time we actually won in courts, and therefore that's how we came to have our rights. And in many countries, there is not a legal system, a judicial system that allows that kind of thing to happen. So internationally, we engage with our government and with other governments to bring about a freer and a more just society for LGBTQI people. Thank you. That's kind of a bit of the story that I haven't written, but I wanted to tell.
I wanted to share this picture. This was on the front page of the Daily Courier in Kelowna. And that's me in 97 in the Pride Parade with my then 10-year-old daughter. And at that point in Kelowna, the mayor at the time refused to authorize the proclamation declaring, you know, Pride Week there. So, you know, we really, there was just you can just see it snakes up just about to there, you know. There was just that few people in the parade, but we were determined to have, you know, make a statement. And now it's a much bigger event there. So progress does get made, but only with people going out of their way to be visible, to speak out, to share their stories and everything. So.
I think what you've highlighted is one of the important things of a democratic society, being able to not just press for the law, get a law changed, but then reaching out to see other places where there's injustice and mistreatment, you know, shining a light on that and putting support behind people in other countries that are just wanting to not be killed for being openly gay or just wanting, you know, just wanting to live their lives. So I think that's a really important thing that you emphasized around Canada as well, that there's an organization that refugees were able to be involved in an organization, and to that there was support from other people to say, we'll all dress in white so that, you know, it'll be harder for people to single out you. So just thank you for touching on highlighting those points. Cynthia?
Yes, I think I'd like to tell also a story of that happened in Canada related to this. In 1978, I was invited to attend a gay and lesbian conference in Saskatoon. And I thought, wow, Saskatoon, you know, wonderful. And I guess I was anticipating attending to read stories and poetry. I was very excited that I was on the venue together with my favorite lesbian singer, Farron. And there was planned a short march, or like very short kind of march in support of this event around a couple of blocks in the park in Saskatoon. And about 3 or 4 days before the conference took place, the gay and lesbian office was arsoned, was burned. And that's the kind of opposition that it took. And when the march took place, I was not physically well enough to be part of it, but there were probably less than 50 people who were able and willing to take the chance of walking around a couple of blocks in the center of Saskatoon because they might be recognized, because there might be violence. I think there are some people who went disguised with a mask, or sometimes even people wore paper bags over their head with the eyes cut out so that they could participate without putting their lives in danger. And, you know, despite that, the conference went off, you know, in a kind of beautiful, wonderful way. And we had the most joyful meal at the end of it, in which we were all singing and dancing together. You know, maybe I should say in emphasis to the ability to celebrate goes hand in hand with our ability to protest and to fight for recognition that, you know, it's in the face of. In fact, if it's okay, I'll read another poem that I've written. And this one I've written for Aging with Pride. So Aging with Pride is an event that happens each year. And 411, I believe, is one of the co-sponsors.
Yes.
And also Community and the West End Seniors Network and Gordon Neighborhood House. And it is coming up tomorrow. And it's an event that is both going to be virtual and a few people are able to gather in person. And so I wrote this for this event. It's called A-G-I-N-G, What Aging with Pride Means to Me. A, against the current, against the tide, against the odds, against the grain, against the arrogance of ageism. G, growing into ourselves, growing in grit, growing in grace, growing in gratitude. I, in spite of invisibility, in spite of injury, in spite of insidious insistence of irrelevance. N, nothing nullifying our naming. We advance as we morph into G, greats. Great aunts, great uncles, great grandparents, of generations, of a movement that gathers and liberates the entire alphabet. L, G, B, T, Q, 2, S, I, A, plus, plus, B, I, P, O, C. Within our lifetimes, we began all alone. The only one without names, without letters, without words for our identities. Now we are many. We claim every letter, every combination, every word we can spell. We did this. We are aging with pride.
Ah, that is powerful. Such a wonderful way that you've used the words in each. I love the acronym and just the ways that you have had powerful statements. So thank you. Maybe we could have you read that and record it for our spins. That would be a great thing to have left on and printed on our webpage and for people to think about.
Thank you, Sister C. You know, I imagined at one point that, you know, how you call out letters in when you're a cheerleader. And you're cheering for your team. And of course, I was the farthest thing in the world from a cheerleader during my high school time. You know, I barely survived high school as a sort of brainiac kind of person. But now apparently I've become a cheerleader for pride and for our community. So give me some pom-poms and I'll call out the letters.
That's great. Any other comments or questions?
Just to see, thank you for this opportunity. It's really great that you're doing this, and I thank all of the other people that read and made comments. I really appreciate hearing the different perspectives. So thanks a lot.
I think the historical perspectives, as well as connecting that celebration is celebration really means that you've overcome something, that there was a struggle. Sometimes people seeing the happy smiles or having the painted flags on their cheeks might just think, wow, this is a great celebration. But the stories that you've told help give the history and the suffering or the doubts and the worry that people had about, you know, their very life, you know, whether they might be fired, whether they might be put in jail, beat up by a logger guy type. Those are all things that the celebration really highlights. So thanks for giving the story behind the celebrations and for, you know, encouraging and giving us all ways that we can also participate in the movement. Can you share the address and ways to get the publications?
A lot of our books from Corky are available through Lulu, LULU.com, and you just go to their website and go to the bookstore. The Racism magazine does somebody else want to talk about the best way to do that? I mean, we have it available electronically on our group, our Facebook group page. If you go to Facebook and search for just the word Corky with a hyphen, Q-U-I-R-K hyphen E, you'll get to our Facebook group, and then you can find the Fighting Racism from a Queer Perspective zine on there.
And Lulu, can you tell just a little bit about Lulu for other people that might be interested in how they work with independent writers?
I don't really want to advocate for people using Lulu. We haven't had the best experience with them, but they're a self-publishing company in the United States, and they've done several of the books from Quirky from many years ago, starting many years ago. So we've been using them for quite a while, but it is self-publishing, but they do assign ISBN numbers and make them available internationally. So you can order our books through bookstores and online on your favorite book vendor online. And your local bookstore can look them up and order them too.
And Together We Stand is the book. Is it a zine or a book? How do you distinguish between a zine and a book?
The book's a lot longer.
Yeah, length, I think. So this zine got to be quite large, that's for sure.
And have we publicly thanked Sister C for being one of the editorial staff allowing this zine to come to fruition? Thank you so much.
And we have a dedication in here to you.
Exactly. And the, you know, the inspiration for gay liberation and for combining celebration with protest, you know, was taught to us by the Black people of North America who never stopped singing while fighting for their rights.
I noticed and acknowledged the number of references that you made to the civil rights movement. I was involved in that movement from 9-year-old child. Wasn't old enough to be on the line, but a friend of mine and I had gotten a Brownie camera, and we asked if we could take pictures of anyone who was beating or spitting on the protesters outside the Copper Kettle restaurant in Kansas City. And just from childhood, it logged in my head the value of a child, because there's some things people don't want a child to see them do. So I don't know whether it was both protective, but it really anchored in my mind that people had to fight. You know, now people go in, they sit down on any seat they want to sit to in a restaurant, but there was a struggle behind that across the country and people who were hurt seriously. So I think in modeling that and talking about and people telling their stories of how they were hurt in encouraging people to come out, or hurt when talking about a parade, or going to, I think Chris has talked about going to meetings where worried about being outed because the issue was going to be around acknowledgement of same-sex marriages, and then going from that issue. So it's a stepping stone. So I think that within the zine, some of the things that you have talked about, people can do to be allies of movements, allies and supporters, those are very good things. So I don't sell any of the books or represent any of the books, but the books that have been really well documented through book reviews are something that's good for someone who might say, oh, I don't have time to read all of that. White Rage gives a really fundamental coverage of and examples of white pride for people, or white privilege. When people say, oh, I wasn't privileged, it really documents and helps people to understand. So thank you for your work and the way that you reached out to have a broad spectrum of people both telling their stories as well as writing reviews of books. And so that brings us around to the 2 o'clock hour. Neil, I'm going to ask, since next week is Awesome August, if you can give us one of your awesome stories as part of that. We're also going to have, as part of next week, another of our Move It to Movement. We're going to have chair exercise. The Guprit, who is the membership director at the 411 Center, is also certified in chair exercise. So she's going to give us some exciting chair exercises. And then we will be unveiling other things that we're doing during August. We're going to revisit some of the holistic health things people are doing. We know and have noted that many people have become addicted to oxycodone, other types of things used for pain relief. And we have people within the group who have learned how to do other things, alternatives to pain relief. And so during August, we're going to be unfolding those things as well as giving opportunities. If the centers were given the right to reopen, but because there are even more procedures that have to be put into place before everyone can come in, we're giving people who wanted to instruct a class an opportunity to do a sample class, field test your class by doing it as one of our presentations in August or September. And then in September, you may have heard Culture Canada. Canada Days used to be the last 3 days in September. Now, last year, with having to switch to virtual, they moved it from the 24th of September to the 24th of October. So we will be having 2 Fridays that we're doing something as well. The 24th of September, we need everyone to plan to show up because we're going to do a workshop where we learn how to write tribute poems. The very next Friday is the first Friday of October. It's International Day of the Older Person. And people who have written a tribute poem will have a chance to do some of their poems on the big celebration, physical in-place celebration that will be held at the 411 Center, but also it will be held virtually. So we will have fun with some other things doing October, and I'll be calling upon, and Nancy will be calling upon each of you to see which ways you want to showcase something or do something as a writer, speaker, dancer, all of the other ways. Playwright, Don. Don's going to write a play for Neil's story. It's Jane in the bus?
No, and the car.
Jane in the car. So we have a lot of communities that have formed within this group of people who have similar interests. So I will be looking forward to seeing you again. Go and flourish. This morning, you have been listening to a special Pride Week launch here at CGSF with a recording of a meeting, a Zoom meeting of the Powered by Age group, where our special guests were members of QUIRKY, the Queer Imaging and Writing Collective for Elders organization. It's been around since 2016. Join me again next week at 10, where it's always love time, poem time.